Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida and brought to you by TECO Peoples Gas at the heart of Florida's energy. The state's thriving spirits industry is in the spotlight as Jacksonville Business Journal Editor-in-Chief Tim Gibbons invites St. Augustine Distillery co-founder and CEO Philip McDaniel to share his journey as the company prepares to celebrate its 10th anniversary.
Thanks for joining me. First of all, obviously we have to do this over a recording link. I'm not sitting there over drams of whiskey, which how you both prefer to do it, but I think this will suffice. But clearly the distillery is a hit in St. Augustine, number one tourist attraction in the area and a rapidly growing tourism city. And the bourbon itself is garnering praise. But take me back to the beginning. What in the world had you say, I'm going to open this in Florida?
That's a great question. So I had been retired for about 10 years. I had a sales and marketing company I started when I was 25. And we evolved into kind of the specialist in the convenience and oil industry, where we were making these kind of like Hess toy trucks or soccer balls with, you know, BP and Amoco logos, or free baseball cards at 7-Eleven with a fill. And it was this promotional specialty company, promotional merch company, really, for the oil and gas trade. And we had a really lovely run. And I was very lucky to have sold that business when I was 40. And I took a bit of time. It took, sold the company, made a little bit of money. And my wife said, look, we have this gift of time and a little bit of, you know, money that we don't have to worry about, you know, how we're going to eat for the next, you know, few years. Let's go ahead and raise the kids together. So for a decade, from the time I was 40 until 50, I was a stay-at-home dad, helped my wife, you know, raise our kids, and got really involved in St. Augustine. We moved here, Tim, in 1994. And during that retirement, I was able to get involved in some great nonprofits. Built a couple of skate parks here in St. Augustine, helped launch the amphitheater and get that started here. Arts is a real big passion. All of our kids went to school in Jacksonville at Douglas Anderson, and my wife's an artist, and I recognize the importance and the value of arts within a community. And just did a bunch of things, you know, volunteering time and a little bit of resources to help, you know, incubate St. Augustine to be a better place. We knew tourism was growing. We knew the city was going to grow. And I felt like if we can help make this a better, cooler place to live, despite the growth, it, you know, that would be a good thing. And so that was really what I did for those 10 years. And then in 2010, 2011, when our youngest was finally going to go off to college, I was like, had done a bunch of nonprofit stuff and really enjoyed it. But it was like, hey, maybe now I've still got some, you know, some years left, and I could, you know, maybe go back in the private sector and create a business that would allow me to do something in St. Augustine where I want to live and still be. And we have a great tourism industry here. And if there were a way we could create a business that could create a cool product or experience and then utilize the revenues from that company to channel back into the community and continue to do social good, that would be a good thing. I've always felt like for me, you know, in these latter years of my life, I try and create, the business really was created to be what I call the intersection of economic development and social good and our community development. So that was really the thought behind it. So we looked at a lot of different business models. I had partner Mike Diaz, who had run several large companies, and we were introduced through the city manager, John Regan. I was looking for some partners and some capital to help get this thing off the ground. And Mike came in and thought I was crazy because he said, regulated industries, alcohol, I should run. And I explained that, no, this is going to be different. And we've got a great team of people who've agreed to help us get this started, including Dave Pickerel, who I'll talk about in a moment, from Maker's Mark. And Mike came on board, and that was really a game changer.
So were you a big bourbon fan? Why distilling? I mean, of all of the, you know, you said regulated industry, yep, capital intensive, yep, long time before, you know, particularly for the bourbons, long time before you can even start selling them. What was the passion part of that project?
You know, I think it was the fact that it hadn't been done yet. I was generally a beer and wine guy, but I had drank bourbon. It wasn't like I was a crazy bourbon guy, but we saw an opportunity to pioneer. I think in the trip going out, there was a trade show called the ADI, the American Distilling Institute. And I went out there in 2010, 2011. And I was at this trade show, Tim, and there were probably 50 people from all over the country, from New York and Pennsylvania and all these states. And these folks who were really getting on the ground floor of craft distilling. And the way I described it was, it felt like to me what it might have been like for those people who were on the North Shore of Hawaii in like the late 50s and early 60s when they had discovered this amazing place to surf. And just being in Portland and seeing the energy that some of these early entries had done, I said, this is a really cool thing. And I think if we can bring this to Florida, use the visitation and the exposure that we're going to get here in St. Augustine to the brand, we might be able to build something. And lo and behold, I met Dave Pickerel, who, as I said, was the former master distiller at Maker's Mark for 15 years. And I explained to him, you know, in that moment, I said, Dave, I'm from Florida. You know, I have this idea of, you know, making a distillery, making some bourbon, the first in Florida, we think. We live in a high tourist town, and we think we can get a lot of visitors to come in. And he said, Florida, tourism, bourbon, yeah, I'm in. And he came along and helped us start this company. So it was really that energy, honestly, of that trip out to Portland and seeing what that energy was like. And I saw the possibility of bringing that to St. Augustine. I have a dear friend who founded the San Sebastian Winery, which is just two blocks away. And I told Charles Cox, as he and his dad, Gary, started it. And I said, I've got this idea. And he said, you know, Philip, if you can find a building and hopefully get, you know, on the route where the trolleys can drop people coming off, he said, you'll have that visitation. You'll have that opportunity to get people to try your product. And if you do that, he said, I think you can find some success. He said, it takes time. And I think that there's one thing I've learned in this business. It's been the importance of patience.
You're starting out with vodka and gin, right?
Yeah. So we started laying down bourbon right away. I mean, the first thing that ever came out of the still was White Dog. And we put that in barrel on December the 13th, 2013. And but we, as you pointed out a minute ago, bourbon's not something that you can make today and sell tomorrow. You know, you have to make it today and then wait. And so in order to generate some cash flow, we made the business decision to really only sell what we would produce within the facility. And we said, well, if we're going to make whiskey and wait, we have to make something now. And so we looked at other options and we saw that vodka and gin could both be made in a relatively short period of time. They're clear spirits. You can make vodka, you know, a couple of days. You can make gin in, you know, basically a month. And so those were the first two products that we released. I think we launched with vodka in March of 2014 when we opened. And then like 5 months later, we introduced a really delicious gin. And then I would say a year after that, we had introduced rum. And we really hadn't planned on making rum, but so many people were coming in and asking for it and saying, when's your rum coming out? It's Florida. You got to have rum.
Florida, right.
I guess we'll make rum too. And so we squeezed in, you know, some production time to cook and ferment and then ultimately distill our rum and barrel it. And it's turned out to be another great addition. And so, but the intention all along was to, you know, to make whiskey and bourbon. And that's still, you know, the focus of the company.
You mentioned the San Sebastian Winery, and obviously, that's also a very regulated industry, but wineries have a little bit easier of a business, or had a little bit easier of a business when you started, in that they could sell their products. You basically couldn't. One of the things that you've done, as well as building the distillery, is you've fought to change those laws in Florida. And I know you're fighting for other legal changes, but talk us through a little bit of the victories that you've seen in getting regulations changed in Florida and what that means for the distillery industry overall.
Well, hey, thanks for saying that and giving me a chance to talk about it. You know, it's been so long, I almost forget. But in the beginning, we couldn't sell any bottles in our tasting room. And we were, you know, really kind of shocked. And again, Charles Cox from the winery said, you know, you're going to need to become a lobbyist quickly because you're going to have to get these laws changed. And so we worked with a great firm, Gray Robinson in Tallahassee. And we were very, very lucky at the time. I want to say it was 2014, 2013. Then Senator John Thrasher was our senator in St. Augustine, and we invited him to the distillery, showed him our business idea, and told him some of the challenges. And he said, "This is crazy. I want to help you." And so, with his leadership, along with Doc Renuart, who was a former state rep, we got two bills sponsored and passed in 2014 that allowed us to sell two bottles per person per year. At the time, it seemed, pretty ridiculous that we could only get two bottles a year to a person, but it was really a game changer. And then a couple of years later, I want to say in 2015, we got it changed to two bottles per person per brand. And we were able to get the law to interpret a brand as anything that had its own unique label, which really then let us open things up. We were making two or three different labels for our vodka. So if somebody wanted to buy, you know, five or six bottles, they could do that. And then I want to say in 2017, they opened it up to six bottles per person per brand per year. And it was kind of stuck there for a few years. And then last year, with the help of just, you know, some more distillers who had opened up, we were able to put a broader push. And we had, you know, good dialogue with the industry and our partners in the distributor and retail trade. And we were able to get those limits removed. And so now craft distilleries can sell drinks by the glass, which is a really big deal for a small producer. One of the challenges from a timing standpoint, when we started, I think we were the third distillery in the state of Florida. And now with the changes that we've made, it's become much more profitable from a business standpoint. There is the possibility to get a return. And so I think there's now there's 50 or 60 distilleries. And my prediction is in the next 5 years, you'll see over 100 or more. You know, there's now four or five in Jacksonville who've popped up, David Cohen and the Manifest guys and Marlin and Barrel. There's just a bunch, and they all came along, you know, once it became a little easier to make a business, but they've all been very involved and very helpful in these changes.
You say a little bit easier to make a business. Easier is obviously on a relative scale. In your case, as well as the challenges of selling the product, you're a tourism-focused business, and obviously going through the COVID years when tourism was down was a big challenge. Looking at the figures for St. Augustine, tourism has come back with a vengeance. What is it like for your business as you're recovering for that, you know, 2020, 2021, even some amount of 2022? How have you come out of all of that?
Well, we had, like any business, we had to adapt and pivot to, you know, what would allow. We wound up, believe it or not, shifting our production to hand sanitizer because for a, you know, 6 to 8 month period, the world wasn't sure which way things were going to go. And bars had basically shut down for, you know, close to a year. Yet we had some of our largest retail partners. Total Wine was a great example. They could not buy hand sanitizer. And in the course of 6 months, we sold, you know, a lot of product to them, which they use both for their consumers as well as keeping their store clean. And so we, you know, we adapted. And then, you know, about a year, year and a half later, the bar started to open up and visitors started coming back to the distillery. And that was great for us. The challenge, of course, has been hiring and retaining employees because there's just, you know, a lot of people during COVID and then during the recovery years chose not to come back to work. And so getting people to come, you know, and work in the service industry was a challenge. It still is. You know, I could certainly spend time, probably a whole nother interview to talk about the challenges that we're facing with things like workforce housing. It's probably the biggest issue in our industry right now is just having people to be able to afford to work in the service industry, whether it's at the distillery or for a restaurant, or if you're in a hospital, you're an educator, you're, you know, first responder. It's very expensive, you know, to live right now. One of the challenges of COVID has been this tremendous increase in the cost of homeowning. And as a result, it's a lot more expensive and folks can't do it. So we've adapted. We've tried to make our company a great place to work. We've been very, very lucky to be able to offer, you know, things like health benefits. And this year, for the first time, we offered a 401k to our employees, which is, you know, awesome. Tip the hat to Mike, who's my business partner. He's a financial wizard and he's able to, you know, make all those things happen for us. So we really focused to make the company a great place to work. And anybody who's visited the distillery, I think we'll always kind of note that it's a fun place, you know, and you have a great time there. And that's all attributed to our GM, Will Hensler, who's running it now. And then our employees who are just the best people. We're really lucky to have them.
That affordable housing question, I mean, St. Augustine, really across the state, particularly in those tourist heavy areas where how you can, it's not like margins are great anywhere in that business, and how you can pay people enough to be able to afford housing, I think really is an issue that the state has to come to grips with.
For sure. I've reached out to our leadership. I reached out to Representative Renner, who's now the Speaker of the House, as well as Senator Travis Hudson. And I said, guys, you know you got a lot going on this year, but we absolutely have to do something to deal with it. We're working directly with the county administration here in St. Johns County. I've had several meetings with Chairman Christian Whitehurst and others about what we must do, you know, to find ways to, you know, to provide some level of workforce housing. Even understanding the difference between affordable housing and workforce housing and talking through those issues and creating a language that everybody understands is an important first step. But we're working, you know, with the county leadership right now to help try and make that happen. And they're listening, which is great. So we just, you know, it's definitely a challenging issue.
Philip McDaniel joining us. Next, he offers a glimpse of the future when Florida Business Minds continues. People's Gas, invested in lowering emissions and developing sustainable energy for a greener Florida. Peoples Gas is committed to Florida's clean energy future. Learn more about renewable natural gas at floridasenergy.com.
So to back up a moment ago, you were talking about the growth of craft distillers. And it's funny looking back that as an industry, craft distilling hasn't actually been around all that long and is it's gone through changes. And the popularity is of those small batch, locally produced product just continues to grow. You're involved with the National Craft Distiller Association. As you look ahead, what do you see on the horizon in that industry? What's going to be popular next?
You know, I think the innovation of what I'm going to call just unique spirits. Like, for example, I was just over in Tampa this week visiting a friend of mine who owns a company called Dark Door Spirits. And they now have the ability where you can walk into the facility and they have, I don't know, six or seven different barrels, and you can literally create your own blend there on the site. And the labels are such that you get to write the barrel. It's such a cool thing. Now, they're a very small, you know, producer. They don't do a huge volume, but they have kind of figured out, you know, ways to work within the regulated side of the business to be able to then allow their guests this unique experience. So I think for small producers like us, success is going to come in the form of innovation, and both in the form of the products that we make, but also the experiences. And I'll give you one example in our place. We now have one experience that we're creating. We're about to launch another one. And the first one is our bourbon VIP experience, where you can walk in to a paid event. It's $30. It's not expensive, but you get 45 minutes with, you know, one of our really expert, you know, bourbon leaders to be able to walk you through tasting through new make still product that came off the still that day, through a three-year-old, through a port finished bourbon, through an old fashioned single barrels, you know, even these rare, you know, age products that we have. And so those kinds of experiences are allowing us to be able to create, you know, customers and interest in what we're doing. I think that's kind of the future. We're also going to do what they call a thieving class, T-H-I-E-V, like you're stealing something, where you actually are going to have an opportunity. We'll launch it in the next probably 60 days, but where you actually can pay to have an experience where you come in and you will have four barrels of different spirits there, where you'll be able to go into the barrel itself and thieve or take out a little bit of bourbon and then talk about the characteristics within the production area. It's a really cool thing. But those memories and those experiences that we're providing, and I'm sure others are, you know, doing, you know, really interesting things too, I think are going to be, you know, the next iteration.
We were talking before the recording started about that, you know, having family members who visited the distillery and who still talk about it. And your statement of that, as much as you create the spirits, you create experiences. And that is it's a mindset. It's not just, you're not just a manufacturer, though you're that, but you're also trying to build something more.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's, for us, we think that is, you know, the differentiator. I mean, because in any business, it's like, what's your point of difference, right? How are people going to differentiate one brand from another? And we're never going to be able to outproduce or outscale a Maker's Mark. I mean, these guys have been doing it for a long, long time, and they have much larger stills, and they'll spill more, you know, whiskey in an afternoon than I'll make in a year. So it's great. And that's the beauty of, you know, our American economy. We can innovate, we can create and bring guests in. I think people today more than anything want to learn and be taken on a journey, you know, and that's a lot of what we're trying to do, is to continue to do that. Our biggest challenge right now, if I can, you know, offer up one thing to you and your listeners, but one of the big challenges facing our industry is the ability to get our product to consumers where they live. The e-commerce, you know, certainly through COVID, there was just e-commerce just was redefined and reinvented. And wineries around the country, as an example, in 41 of the 49 states are permitted to ship directly to a consumer from that winery. And it's a big deal both for the consumer, because they get to say, hey, I'm getting a monthly or quarterly subscription from my favorite winery, wherever they're from. And it's wonderful for the winery, because then they can, you know, make a full margin, and it's a better economic thing for them, because it's very hard as a small business to, you know, to maintain profitability. In the spirits industry, I want to say it's only 9 or 10 states currently have the privilege of being able to ship from a distillery to the consumer. And the states currently that allow it are fairly small. It's like, I want to say Rhode Island and maybe Vermont and Alaska, and very, very small. And we're working with the leadership here in Florida, as well as with our industry partners, to try and come up with a middle ground to allow that to happen. So all I can tell you, stay tuned. And for those of you who are fans, you know, we were just talking to Brian, you know, on the call who set up this interview. He's saying, I was just out. I had to go to Oregon to get product that I couldn't get, you know, from Utah or whatever. You know, having the ability to allow consumer choice is really a big deal. And I think that's the next, you know, you talk about what's next legislatively and you know, from a helping grow the business. And when we do that, Tim, we're able to, you know, employ more people and just, you know, continue to grow the brand into other markets. So we're looking forward to that.
Is that just a fight in Florida, or are you active on a national scale from a lobbying standpoint to...
Yeah, on a national level, I've been fortunate to serve on the board of the Distilled Industry Spirits Council of the United States, otherwise known as DISCUS. And DISCUS is the Association of Spirit Manufacturers, large and small. So it's Bacardi, Diageo, Brown-Forman. And then recently in the last 5 years have kind of recognized the importance and place that small producers have. And I've had the privilege of serving as the representative for the craft industry on that big DISCUS board. And I've kind of been quietly table pounding there in those meetings and saying, you know, look, if you guys want small producers like us to continue to innovate and get to a point where maybe one day you might want to have us be part of your organizations, we need the ability, and your consumers need the ability to be able to buy our product when and how they want. Because at the end of the day, it's all about consumer choice. So we're definitely fighting it on a national scale, although it is always decided on a state-by-state basis. That shipping piece that we discussed has to be re-regulated or modernized, if you will, on an individual state basis. Right now, I just saw something this morning that New York is now in play, and there's some legislation in New York that could allow direct-to-consumer or DTC privileges for consumers and spirit producers. It's a big deal.
So what's next on the horizon for you? I mean, you have, as I said, the bourbon's been winning awards, the tourists are coming back. What's next on the horizon?
You know, innovation really for us, you know, our favorite thing is sitting down, you know, with our retail partners, whether it's Publix or ABC or Total or whoever, and say, what products can we maybe custom create for you? And that's our favorite thing, is working with those guys, because they're always looking for new, you know, and different products that they can offer on the shelf. And to be able to say, hey, this product is made for us by producer, St. Augustine Distillery, whoever, is kind of a big deal. So we like that. And then just continuing to create great experiences at the distillery. We're really excited about these, you know, VIP classes and barrel thieving and some other ones that we have in development. We're not so much about becoming a bar. A lot of crafts, we're very blessed that we're in St. Augustine, which is a city with a lot of tourism. A lot of guys are in smaller cities and they don't have this foot traffic, so they rely on the revenue that's generated by, you know, making spirits and then selling them in a cocktail, which is awesome. But we've got a great partner in our building in the ice plant. We don't necessarily want to be a bar or sell a lot of cocktails, but we do want to be able to, you know, offer to our guests and theirs, you know, some unique experiences. So I would say, you know, experience development and innovation is probably next for us.
Last two questions. As you look back over your career in the distillery industry, not an easy industry to break into, but as you said, it's growing. If somebody else wants to start up a craft distillery, what one bit of advice would you have for them?
My advice would be to really assess where you're going to fit in the industry, right? What do you want to make, and where is it going to live on the shelves? And why would I had a great a great challenging question. It was a very humbling question. I was 6 months into this thing, and I was dealing with a guy named Pat Croce. Pat was he created some really wonderful bars down in Key West, and he has a huge rum bar down there. And he said, Philip, I like you, but I got 101 rums on my bar. Why do I need 102nd? And I was like, I just didn't have an answer for him. And I was like, good question. Let me go back and answer that. So I think what you have to do is think about, you know, where you're going to sell your product and why a consumer is going to want to buy it over something else. And then also think about your route to market. Are you going to try and go through the traditional, you know, three-tier system where you're going to sell it through bars and restaurants? Are you going to sell it through retailers, or are you going to sell it, you know, on your own premise? But, you know, really think through your business plan. I would absolutely encourage somebody to spend as much time as they can visiting and touring, and spending as much time as they can with other distillers who have been up and running, so they can ask that same question, because they're going to get some real great, you know, feedback.
Excellent. Well, as we wrap up, kind of a personal question, what's your favorite drink?
My favorite drink is an old fashioned. I just I happen to be in love with great bourbon, not just ours. And I just love an old fashioned. I think Manhattan's kind of neck and neck, but I think the old fashioned is kind of where I'm at.
Excellent. Well, everybody do appreciate the time, and it sounds like there's a bright and exciting future ahead. And I'm glad that we were able to take some time and talk about how you got here and what's on the horizon.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's a pleasure. And thanks to you and everybody at the Business Journal for the good work you do.
Thank you for downloading Florida Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida and brought to you by Tico People's Gas at the heart of Florida's energy.